trying to end a currency war.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. The group of 20 major economies of the world are meeting in Moscow today, and the biggest item on the agenda is global monetary policy, with some countries complaining about a currency war. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us now with the details. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, what is a currency war exactly?
The idea is that it's a situation where countries follow policies that are intended to drive down the value of their currencies and thereby give their industries a competitive advantage in international markets. And the accusation that some are making at the moment is that it's quite specifically the unorthodox monetary policies being pursued, notably by the Federal Reserve, but also the Bank of Japan and the Bank of England, which are, if you like, flooding their economies with money, making it more difficult for others to compete.
But this is exactly what some of the top economic thinkers around the world have been telling these monetary policymakers to do for some time, to get the economies going, to drive up domestic demand, and to restart the global economy.
That's exactly right. I mean, the point here, I think, is that certainly if you ask the central bankers what they're doing, they will say they are driven fundamentally by a desire to stimulate their domestic economy, and the impact on the exchange rate is a kind of unintended consequence.
And I assume we shouldn't expect any kind of peace treaty for the currency wars coming out of this summit.
I think we'll probably get some kind of statement which will say that it's important to avoid competitive devaluations. But then I think everybody would go away and do pretty much the same kind of things they're doing anyway. And I think the reason that the likes of Ben Bernanke would give for justifying that is that they would say, well, look, we're not engaging in competitive devaluations. To the extent that it weakens our currency, it is an unintended side effect of what is fundamentally, they would say, about stimulating very weak domestic economic performance.
The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Thanks, Andrew.
My pleasure, Jeremy.
One of the most closely watched stocks in the market has been underperforming lately. While the Dow has been inching toward a record high, Apple's stock has taken a significant dive. But Alan Sloan, senior editor at large at Fortune magazine, says that has more to do with investment managers on Wall Street than anything that's going on in Cupertino. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so you say that Apple's ups and downs are not all about the fundamentals of the company.
Right. That's the case here with Apple, because Apple was so big and ran up so much that when it was running up, all the managers had to own it. And then when it starts going down, you've got the opposite thing, which is if other people are bailing on it and you still have it, you're at a disadvantage. Meanwhile, people like me, I call us financial voyeurs, are just sitting and laughing because the thing runs up and runs down when nothing really has changed.
Well, wait a minute. You say nothing has changed. The CEO is different. We've got Tim Cook instead of the visionary Steve Jobs. And also, you know, maybe there's not as much demand anymore for the iPhone 5 or the new iPad or anything like that.
Well, when Jobs left the company, it was more than a year before the stock hit its all-time high. So it's not as if Jobs dies, the stock crashes. And you're right, the prospects of Apple are unclear, but you can't forever be getting 50% plus profit margins on your product.
Well, somebody must have made the decision that it was time to sell before all of the other investment managers jumped on the same train.
See, so you actually think that on a day-to-day basis, the market is rational? This was the classic momentum play. It ran up, it ran down, with no real changes. I don't know where it's going. If I knew where it was going, I certainly wouldn't tell anybody.
Alan Sloan, senior editor at large at Fortune magazine. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Jeremy.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning. More than 1% lower in Tokyo, up a tenth of a percent right now in Paris, and same deal in London. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 9 points to close at 13,973.
Mark. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
There is, give or take, $1 trillion of student loan debt out there, and a weak job market is making it even more difficult for graduates to pay it back. So what if borrowers were allowed to refinance those student loans? From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
The average interest on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage right now is just over 3.5%. For most outstanding federal student loans,
the vast majority of it is actually over 6.8%. So it's many times higher than most other loans that are out there right now.
That's Tobin Van Ostern with Campus Progress, a liberal policy group. It's launched a campaign urging the federal government to let student loan borrowers refinance at lower rates. Mark Kantrowitz with FinAid.org says there's a reason mortgages and car loans are cheaper: collateral. If you don't pay, the lender can take your car.
If you default on a federal education loan, they can't repossess your education.
Campus Progress says cutting interest rates to 5% would put about $14 billion in borrowers' pockets this year alone, money they'd pour back into the economy. The federal government, though, would lose billions in revenue. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally, to a student in eastern Pennsylvania who was more than a little disappointed with one of her grades. She got a C+ in a course at Lehigh University after being given 0 out of 25 points for participation. So she sued, seeking a B and $1.3 million in damages. The judge rejected the suit. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.